We only have this week before we break for the constituency period. So perhaps it's a good thing that we're resolving the question of the magistrates, which is the first item on our agenda this morning. Once we've dispensed with that, we'll receive a briefing from Mr. Bassett and Co. On the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill. Honourable members, you should have received the reports. Well, they're actually draft reports. They only become reports when you have approved of them. And we've been through each of the three cases in all the circumstances on the issues. Do you want us to go through the report?
Holding The letter from the commission to the magistrate be reduced or withheld. The report regarding that determination and the reason thereof must be tabled in Parliament by the minister within 7 days of such determination, if Parliament is in session or if Parliament is not in session within 7 days after the commencement of the ensuing session. And they recommend that the table report in Parliament for consideration in terms of rule of section 34A of the Act. And then the letter from, in fact, to the McCarthy speaker was just, J.T. Kadebe, Minister, wishes to inform Parliament about the determination by Magistrates Commission to withhold the remuneration of Mr. Chu, who has been abstained from office, and to provide Parliament with reasons they are. Now, they're not actually asking us to do anything. The remuneration was suspended. The remuneration was withdrawn once it was suspended by the minister.
So I think we've got to ratify that fact. I think, Chair, then what I would want to suggest is that maybe we proceed with both. Departmental officials can just check, and if it wasn't necessary to withdraw his salary, then we just open that before the House.
Okay.
Because that's
the decision here.
No force and effect until the House confirms it.
All right. But yeah, I think this is, I want to suggest to
be proceed in considering both the reports.
Both the reports.
Okay. Can I just ask on paragraph 2?
Which one?
The suspension of the short.
Okay.
The last sentence, are we referring to a reason or those reasons? There seems to be no reason why the magistrate is being removed from office for that reason.
Oh, it should
other
be
that reason or those reasons.
It should be.
I'm not sure what.
You want to tell us
for that reason.
Singular,
yeah. Okay. Well spotted, Steve. Okay, and I'm putting both reports to you, Honourable Members.
One.
Oh, all right. Which one's first? Approved. Seconded. All in favour? Anyone against? No. Good. Then the second one.
Okay, just one wording on all of them, sorry. Even amend, which is basically the other one. I don't like the numbering. It should go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then recommendations. There's only one paragraph, there's no one numbering. But there's sort of recommendations should be number 6 or number 4 or number 4. Isn't appropriate. So just recommendation.
Right. Take out the number and go
down.
And on the third one as well.
But then this.
You're proposing adoption?
Yeah.
Seconded? All in favor? Anyone against? That's done with those changes. Mr. Romano has just confirmed that Mr. Tudor is not getting a salary.
Yeah. And then I think the issue would be, do we have to confirm the ministers before?
All right, thank you for that. Mr. Bassett.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Chair, we're going to do a briefing on the Criminal Procedure Amendment Bill, 26 of 2012. We did distribute some documents, a short briefing note. And because it has such a bearing on the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill, or Judicial Matters Amendment Act of 2008, we also circulated the bill. Well, I've circulated the bill and not the final act, because the bill also has, at the back of it, a memorandum on the objects, which might be helpful. And then we also circulated an extract of the Criminal Procedure Act, the relevant provisions and the surrounding provisions, so that you can see the amendments in their context. Chair, I'm going to ask one of our new colleagues, in, or relatively new colleagues in our component, Mr. Willie Matai, to take us through the briefing. And then we also have the State Law Advisors that assisted us with certification of the bills, Mr. Alan Small and Ms. Angelique Storfus. So I'll ask Mr. Matai to take the committee through the briefing. Thank you.
Mr. Matai?
Thank you, sir. I'll start with background information to the bill. The aim of the bill is to amend sections 316 subsection 12 of the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1977. Section 316 subsection 10 of the Criminal Procedure Act regulates applications for condonations, leave to appeal, and further evidence in criminal proceedings in the Supreme Court of Appeal, where applications for condemnation, leave to appeal, and further evidence are refused by the High Court. In the case of the above-mentioned refusal, Section 316, Subsection 8 of the Criminal Procedure Act permits an accused to apply to the President of the Supreme Court of Appeal to grant any of these applications. When such an application is made to the Supreme Court of Appeal, Section 316C requires that the entire record of the proceedings in the High Court must be placed before the judge of the Supreme Court considering the Supreme Court of Appeal concerning the petition. Section 316 of the Criminal Procedure Act was amended by Section 16 of the Judicial Matters Amendment Act 16208. Prior to that amendment, Section 316 of the Act required that when notice of a petition is received by the High Court, the Register of the Court must forward to the Register of the Supreme Court of Appeals, among others, the record of the proceedings in the High Court, in respect of which the appeal was refused. However, the Register did not submit a record of proceedings if certain conditions were met, and these conditions are the following. If the accused was legally represented at the trial, or if the accused and the prosecuting authority agree thereto, or if the prospective appeal is against the sentence only, lastly, if the petition relates solely to litigation for condemnation. If any of these conditions are present, then the Register only submit a copy of the judgment, which includes the reasons for conviction and sentence. The judges considering the petition had the discretion to call for further information from the High Court, including calling for the record of the proceedings. Prior to those two amendments referred to before, Section 309C4 of the Criminal Procedure Act dealing with similar appeals in criminal appeals from the Magistrates Court to the High Court provided that where leave to appeal has been refused, and after petitions, the judge president in question, the clerk of the Marshal's Court must appeal the following. The application for leave to appeal that was refused, the Marshal's reason for refusal, and the record of the proceedings in the trial court. However, the provisions to subsection 4C provide that full record of the proceedings in the trial court may not be submitted if the accused was tried in the court legally represented. In the case of Hinga versus the state and others, the Constitutional Court, amongst others, found Section 394 of the Human Rights Act to be unconstitutional. The Constitutional Court has also the view that the record of the case should, as a matter of course, be placed before the judging judges on the basis that an adequate reappraisal is not possible without the record. The court ordered that these exceptions must be deleted. Section 316 of the Human Rights Act regulates an application for discovery from record to the SCA has corresponding exceptions to those contained in Section 394 of the Act. Therefore, when the exceptions 394 of the Act are deleted in the judicial matters of 208, the corresponding exceptions in respect of applications from the High Court to the SCA contained in Section 316 were consequently deleted. Although the findings are that the declaration of unconstitutionality in the case of Shinga was made in respect of the provisions dealing with Hunger appeals from National Court to the High Court, and that applies in respect of that appeal process are not necessary to apply in respect of a similar process from the High Court to the SCA, due to the very strong wording using the judgment of the Constitutional Court, the department is divided to err on the side of caution, at least because the provision in question had been the subject of the Constitutional Court challenges dating back to 1996. Yes. And the motivation for the amendment. Section 16 of the Judicial Matters dealing with appeal process came into operation on 10 September. Judges approached the minister appointing August. Section 316C in its current form gives rise to the following challenges amongst others, which calculate to the motivation for the amendment. There's delay caused by having to wait for the record of the proceeding resulting in bringing justice to the appellant. The delays may also result in the appellant being detained in prison or released on bail without justification for longer than is necessary. The cost involved in obtaining the records were mostly complete without justification. The increased workload of the Supreme Court of Appeal judges sometimes in cases where issues in the appeal do not warrant the perusal of the current record. The judges of the Supreme Court also confirmed in a report provided to us that at present there are about 60 petitions accumulated and that are waiting for the record of trial and more will accumulate before the proposed amendment takes place. Some will receive their go and more, and the petitions have been left uncertain of the fate of the applications. It is also pointed out that the situation in the Supreme Court of Appeals is intolerable because petitions are piling up in the registrar's office because they cannot be disposed of without record being placed before the petition judges. Even if it is clear from the judgment and the reasons given by the judges as to which way the matter should be decided, in addition, the cost of compiling a record is likely to be prohibitive. We move on to discussion of the clause. Clause 1. Clause 1 of the bill seeks to amend Section 16(1) of the Act in order to make it unnecessary for the record of proceedings in the High Court to be placed before the Supreme Court of Appeal in petition proceedings if the accused was legally represented at trial. Second instance, the accused and proceeding authority agreed thereto. Thirdly, the prospective appeal is against the sentence only. Fourthly, the petition relates solely to an application for condemnation. Furthermore, Clause 1 aims to amend Section 316(12) of the Act in order to give the judges in the Supreme Court of Appeals, considering the petition, a discretion to call for the submission of the record of proceedings. Clause 2 of the amendment of the bill contains a short title and commencement. The conclusion. The amendment restores the position regarding submission of a record of proceedings to the petition judges to the pre-208 position, in terms of which it will be not necessary to submit a record of proceeding when the petition is received, and the petition judges are having a discretion to call for the record if they consider the information that they have to be sufficient. In order to assist in clearing the backlog and raising costs, as mentioned before, for obtaining a record of proceeding, the amendment is effective from 10 September 2010, which is the date on which Section 16 of the Judicial Matters Amendment Act came into operation. The effect of this is that the petitions that are still awaiting records of proceedings will be dealt with as if the bill has not been passed. It is foreseen that this gives peace of mind to applicants who have been waiting finalization of their petitions. Therefore, the issue of retrospective does not cause the petitioners any prejudice and will rather advantage them by speeding up the finalization of their petitions. Also, on the issue of retrospectivity, the Supreme Court of Appeal judges have commented saying that the objection to retrospective legislation generally is the deprivation of accrued rights. In this case, the accused person is deprived of accrued rights. The right of an accused is to have his or her petition properly considered before it is either granted or refused. What that calls for in this case is a matter for the judgment of the judges concerned. Neither before were they nor present are they obliged to read the full record of the trial. And that will continue irrespective of whether the record is provided. There is no prejudice at all to that this person whose petitions are awaiting consideration if the amendment is made retrospective. In essence, it is that the Supreme Court of Appeal judges are also in favor of the retrospectivity issue. That is the long and short of the presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Mitai. Mr. Swart, followed by Mr. Jeffrey.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Eminence. Sage, but I think you touched on the motivation for the retrospectivity, and I think we need a bit more consideration about that issue. You mentioned, firstly, that will not cause prejudice, and inasmuch as there's no deprivation of accrued rights, you also seem to indicate that the SA was in favour of that. I just need greater clarity on that. You referred to some judgment. And then thirdly, the 10th of September, you referred to the Judicial Matters Amendment Act for justification for that date. This is new, Dusty. You need to just unpack that a little more. I think that is my main concern. Obviously, the checks and balances are in your clause one of the bill, where the accused must be legally represented, the prosecuting authority must agree to it. It's only on sentence or application for condemnation. So your accused and prosecuting authority must agree to it. But I'm just concerned if one does go the route of retrospectivity, what happens if along the line some price spark takes his petition, refused and then decides to contest it to the Constitutional Court on the issue of constitutionality? And I think that we just need to be satisfied whether there is any risk involved in this. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, thanks. Just one, I note that the Judicial Matters Bill that we've got before us is the version that was introduced in the National Assembly. Is that the final version? It did not amend it. I wasn't aware that there was any bill that this committee hadn't amended. So I hope it's the right version, although there were no amendments to that section. Then, Chair, I mean, as I understand the rationale, it was that there was the Shimba judgment dealing with Section 309C of the criminal procedure, which required that if the accused was represented at the trial, and if the accused and the DPP agree, and if appeals only against sentence, or if it relates to an application for condemnation, that the Singer judgment found that was unconstitutional. They were of the view, according to the note, that the record of the case should, as a matter of course, be placed before the petition judges on the basis, and you've underlined that adequate prayers are not possible without the record. So that was the reason for the 208 amendment. Take out the provisions relating to appeal from the magistrate's court, and then because the SCA was, the Concord was so firm on it, to take it out for appeals from the High Court. And that was what we were considering it in 208 made eminent sense. So we agreed. I'm just worried that you know, on the basis of a petition from the SCA judges, the original rationale for the amendment is now just totally thrown out. And are you so correct? So Chair, that was sort of one fear. The other then is the retrospectivity. I imagine that the date is the date that the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill or Act became law. So that's why you're making it retrospective. I agree with the issue of it's unlikely to be prejudiced, but have we ever passed any retrospective laws before? Can we pass retrospective laws? Obviously, it's very clear you can't make crimes retrospective, you can't prejudice people retrospectively, but have we ever done it? Has anyone else ever done it? So that's basically the concern. But I think there just needs to be a little bit more. You know, the department was so certain in 2008 that this amendment to 316 was necessary. And now suddenly on the basis of an SEA request, you're no longer, well, you don't even, you agree with 100%.
Thank you, Chair. On the date of commencement, I think Mr. Jiffy has answered it. Yes, we were requested specifically by the SCA to make it retrospective, and why the 10th of September 2010 is used is because that's when that particular provision came into operation. Some of the provisions of that Act came into operation immediately on promulgation, others came into operation. I can't remember the exact details. I think there was a spreading of that date of commencement as some of the provisions, there were many provisions in that Act. And some of them came into operation immediately on promulgation, and some of them had to put into operation. And this one particularly was put into operation the 10th of September 2010. So that's where the date comes from. The other question, there were two questions on retrospectivity. What we can do is make available the Mr. Matari from a memorandum that we received from the Supreme Court of Appeal. I'm happy to make that. Quite happy to make that available to committee members, which we will do. And then there's also a very detailed opinion that we got from the State Law Advisors. I'm sorry, I should have made that available when we sent the documents through yesterday. But that is also available. It's an opinion, a very detailed opinion from the State Law Advisors. I will make that available. Whether the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill that we've submitted to the committee is the final one, no, it isn't. That's oversight. It should have been the B version of the bill. But the provisions that we're talking about, there weren't any amendments to. But I will also just make the B version available. To get back to the question of are we correct doing what we are now when we felt so confident what we were doing in 2008, I suggested to Mr. Mtai not to read out in the briefing. There's a long history of these provisions, and if you have a look at page 3 of the briefing, that other judgments relevant to the amendment of section 316.10. We started off with State versus Ntuli, and I think then there was a State versus Renz, and there was a State versus Stain and Kwala, and then Shinga. So that is one of the reasons why in 2008 the department recommended to this committee that's the way we should go for appeals from the High Courts to the Supreme Court of Appeal, because of the history and the strong wording that was used. And let me just, if I go to the object memo of the 2008 bill. The Constitutional Court was of the view, and I quote, that the record of the case should as a matter of course be placed before the petition judges on the basis that an adequate reappraisal is not possible without the record. It went on further to comment that once this is accepted as sound, there is no basis for the suggestion that an adequate review is possible without the record in relation to each category posed by the exceptions. And it held that these exceptions were unconstitutional. And those exceptions were in 309, which deals with appeals from magistrate courts to high courts, and those exceptions also in the provision dealing with appeals from the high courts to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And as I say, the department, because of the history of these provisions and quite a few amendments along the way, that we decided to err on the side of caution. Whether I think lots of legislation you put on the statute book, and it's only with experience that one and application of the laws where you find that there could be a problem, or you monitor the application of the legislation. And the Supreme Court of Appeal has said to us in those uncertain terms that this is creating more of a problem than the mischief it was intended to address. And the balancing of rights and having a look at both sides, I think that if you balance those rights and the evidence that is placed before us, it might be appropriate that we go the route that has been suggested.
The problem though is you talk about balancing the rights. On the one hand, you've got the rights of the accused to have his or her matter properly considered, which presumably in Shinga the court felt required the record, at least in the magistrate's court. I'm not sure what the other rights you're balancing is. Because what the SCA are raising is a classical problem. It's a practical problem. They say it's delays to the appellant while you wait for the record and the costs of the record and the increased workload that they have, okay, where the issues in the field do not warrant the perusal of the entire record, or presumably they can skim read. I just have a difficulty in terms of in Shinga, the court says, at a magistrate's court level, when you look at an appeal in the High Court, you need to look at the record. Now, in spite of the fact that Ms. Schaefer may not agree with me, the quality of the judgment may not be as good as in the High Court. But why would there be a difference? Why would the Constitutional Court say it imperatively have the record of the Magistrates Court, but it's fine if we don't get it at the High Court? And then if you look at Klinger, which is a judgment from last year, and I'm looking here now at the notes that the research unit did. Klinger is basically... seems to be, although this issue didn't go there because of the judicial, there was a challenge to the section, this particular section, but because it had been amended, that was withdrawn, so unfortunately they didn't rule about it. But if I look at the third bullet, with regard to, this is now on page 2, with regard to a constitutional standard of a fair procedure, MTINAJ held in S versus Klinger, that for judges to make an informed decision, they must have before them sufficient information to conduct an adequate appraisal of the correctness of the conviction and sentence being appealed against.
My fear is just, why must the High Court be different to the Magistrates Court? Okay. Presumably, is it relating to the quality of the judgments? Okay. If you feel that you need to look at the record, does it really make much of a difference if the magistrate's decisions are somewhat less weak than the High Court decisions? High Court decisions, still mistakes can be made.
Mrs. Schaefer says, "My prince," and I agree with her. If you look at the SCA judges' reasoning, they complain about delays relating to injustice to the appellant who has to wait for a long time for the matter to be decided. So delays may result in the appellant being detained in prison without justification longer than is necessary. The costs of obtaining the record, the increased workload, these all apply to 309, which is deemed to be unconstitutional. So, if these are valid factors that we need to consider to ease the workload of SCA judges, then why isn't there a contradiction that they don't apply to the High Court judges who have to consider appeals from the magistrates' courts? So, that's my problem. Chair, I don't think the officials can answer it unless they've got any bright ideas. I would suggest we would need to put it out for public hearing. Because the problem is the SCA obviously not going to rule that this issue is unconstitutional, but they are not the final court. The Constitutional Court is, and the Constitutional Court may well say, "Well, come," because I think there is a contradiction. You're basically the only reason I think is that okay, maybe High Court's judgments are better than magistrates' court judgments, Well, not maybe. I mean, they are, obviously, because the judges are of a higher quality of person. That's why they get paid more. That's why they don't moan about the jury.
And that's why they call superior courts.
That seems to be the only factor. Because the factors that the FCA judges list apply equally due to the High Court judges and to accused in the magistrates' courts. But we may, Chair, I think, need to look at, I know we've got a budget for legal opinions, but this would need, I think, a
Central
Advisor's opinion must be that it is fine. I because otherwise it wouldn't be here.
It is fine.
My worry is it, I don't think it's enough. With respect, I mean, I would have thought a constitutional silk.
Okay. Mr. Bassett.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, we will revert you on those questions that you have raised. On the differences between, and that's one of the things that we'll go into more deeply, but as far as I can recall, I think it was the Constitutional Court of State versus Rents sets out where there is justification for differences between procedures like we are talking about appeal procedures. And as far as I can recall, that case said, among others, that the degree of scrutiny required for appeals, for instance, from magistrates to high courts, the need is greater than it would be as you go up along the ladder. But I think let me get that case and get the extracts from that case and present it to the committee. I'm just giving one example. The question raised by Mr. Jeffrey is why the difference between high courts and magistrates' courts. We will go into that deeper. And then I didn't answer the question, that Mr. Jeffrey raised, whether we have done retrospective legislation in the past. We have. For the life of me, I can't recall a specific one, but I do know that we have done it. Can I also come back with that? I'll give examples of where we've done it. But it certainly isn't the case of creating crimes. That's, as we know, can't do. But there have been instances where this committee has approved a retrospective provision. Tim, also add the SCA have also indicated that they're more than willing, in fact they would like to come and talk to the committee if the committee sees fit and thinks it's appropriate on this particular issue to convey that.
You know, I hear that
they're entitled to be heard. Well, they have public hearings, so they can come. But the difficulty is, you know, the four bullets are understandable, and an explanation in giving more detail around those issues, I don't think one needs, because it's understood. My question is, why does it apply only to SCA judges and not to High Court judges?
All right. Mr. Bassett, we'll need the memorandum from the SCA. We'll need the opinion from stable advisors. Mr. Romano, this bill must be advertised for submission. Has been. For the weekend. Oh, excellent. And the deadline is? Okay. So hopefully those will be coming in. And the intention being that we have public hearings, then the SCA will be heard. So,
well, Tim, we usually ask for comments and then decide whether we want to have people on.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Mr. Jeffrey is proposing that we commission an opinion from senior counsel.
Can you first read that?
You want us to read the others first?
But that's not a bad idea.
The constitutionality of the amendment.
Yeah.
That's basically the bottom line. I mean, my difficulty is I understand the state law advisors will be saying it is constitutional, which it has to, they have to say, because otherwise they wouldn't have certified it.
Mm.
And the bill would be here. But I'm not convinced I mean, I haven't, I mean, it may be useful, maybe if we can get Renz, but Renz is 1996, so it's quite an old case. The interesting one seems to be, and the most recent one seems to be Kinga, which seems to be reaffirming Shinga, which was 207. So, and as I said, the key thing for me is, why is there a difference between when an appeal is considered, why do you only need the record in Madge Court, in the Madge Court and not when you've had to, when the matter was with the High Court? Because unfortunately, the SCA judge's rationale applies to everybody. And that's the difficulty. So the reason they say they want 316 amended applies to everybody. So when Mr. Bassett, I think, spoke about the balancing of rights, what rights are you balancing? Why are you balancing these rights? Is it important to balance the rights for the SCA? Why is it not important to balance those rights for the High Court judges? And the Constitutional Court very clearly found in Shinga that they balanced it the other way.
Can I just ask the question, what would the implications be of extending it to the lower level courts as well? Because remember, we're only dealing with petitions here on the sentences. It's a very small ambit. And that is
the because, Steve, the court specifically found in Shinga that those provisions were unconstitutional. So that is why the amendment was made. The department then felt to be safe. Let's do it for the High Court to SCA. But we cannot go back and amend and revert to the situation before, because the court in Shinga said specifically when they balance those rights and the issues the SCA judges have raised with us, they said specifically it doesn't apply. That may be, but you must rather, you can't consider the appeal unless you've got the record. So that's the problem. So it's the thing of this desire of the judges for the record and this continual statement, both in Shinga and in Kringa, that there must be sufficient information before them. Why does that not apply to judges, to High Court judges?
That's the argument that there is a possibility that the Constitutional Court might require a similar judgment from High Court to SCA. And you say that the rationale is the level of scrutiny which is set out in a different country. But I tend to agree with the Honourable Jeffrey that we would need to get that information with that opinion, because just my reading would seem to think that there's a possibility that the CC might, in exercising jurisdiction, other people already said this. Why are you doing it now, just on a right basis? Unless you can present more than purely on the scrutiny argument, the level of scrutiny where you might have case law, just on a right basis. Well, it's, I appreciate it. It's more complex than I think.
Thank you, Your Honour.
But we do seek an opinion. I don't know if we've got the budget, but we have to approach the speaker.
No.
Or whether we ask the department to get it first.
No, let's not do it. Okay, I'll get the funds from House Chair.
Okay. I think that the thing particularly is the constitutionality of, let's see the State Law Advisor's opinion, but let's also have another one dealing with constitutionality of the proposed amendment. And I'm not so worried about the retrospectivity. If we've done it before, then fine.
But I need Mr. Bassett to give us those instances where we have done it, because thus far,
highly exceptional.
Highly exceptional.
There might have been money. Look, one of those organized crime laws or something like that.
And we should know that there's not going to be any prejudice to anybody.
There certainly are the exception to the rule, and. Yeah, they're not many, but there have been instances.
Sorry, we got money.
Okay.
All right. Any other comments and questions, honorable members?
I'm just thinking whether one shouldn't just in view of the fact that retrospectivity is highly contentious. It's not desirable to ask what we ask in that line.
Yeah.
What an idea of retrospectivity.
No, I'm in that.
I don't think
I was
prejudiced.
Yes. No harm in that. Anything else? On this? Anything else on this? Nothing. All right. Mr. Bassett, Mr. Matai, thank you very much. We'll expect those memorandum from you. And hopefully people will make written submissions. All right.